the walls they have erected to protect them from the view of the people wearing dirty rags and begging for their food, while they're serving up a banquet for the membership inside. The poor man on the bottom's contemplating suicide, 'cause he feels worthless. His hunger pains beyond belief. There's no relief. We're gonna bring back Coxie's army and take his message to the street.
That was Eddie Starr with The Return of Coxie's Army. Thanks, Eddie, wherever you are. You're listening to Labor News Radio. My name is Glenn Lang. I want to say I'm having a lot of fun with these conversations that we do. In fact, I haven't had this much fun since my ex-wife's new boyfriend fell into the alligator pit. Nah, don't get me wrong. It doesn't bother me that she was fooling around with this guy. Hell, every 40-year-old woman ought to have a shot at some long-haired pretty boy with a name like Jean-Luc and bright red silk underwear. I found out about the underwear while I was over at my ex-wife's doing laundry one Saturday morning. Yeah. No, what really bugged me about this guy was I found out he was a low-wage, union-busting, scum-sucking scab. The next time I saw my ex-wife, I handed her a ruler and said, you better check to make sure this fish is legal. So, of course, the day he falls into the alligator pit, he's whining and crying and carrying on and telling everybody what a good friend he'll be if they just help him out, promising to have everybody's back. Somebody in the crowd yelled, "Yeah, you've had my back for a long time. I got knives sticking out of it every which way." But anyway, yeah, he was sure going to be somebody's buddy if they just help him out. And the carrying on got so loud and obnoxious, finally my ex-wife walked up and put her foot on his forehead and pushed him under. And she turned to me and she said, "Had to throw him back. He wasn't legal." Well, of course, there's three morals to this story. The first one is, when you're up to your ass in alligators, it's a little too late to start building solidarity among your fellow workers. The second moral to this story is that these guys who walk around proclaiming that they can stand on their own two feet and they don't need no damn union to help take care of them, when it comes right down to it, they never measure up. The third moral to this story is that real men and real women carry union cards. So what I want to know is, have you got your union card on you? I've said before that 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue is sitting on the intersection of unbridled greed and unbridled ruthlessness. These guys are out to steal the world if they possibly can. You know, it's one thing to want a lot out of your life. It's one thing. It's another thing to want a lot more than that out of your life. But for somebody who wants absolutely everything, there's a special place in hell. And that's got to be right at the right-hand side of the devil. Because you're definitely doing the devil's work when you're working with that kind of greed. It's just got to be the wickedest thing to think that it's okay for old folks to not have a pension so that they can live without starvation or poverty in their old age after they've worked hard and played by the rules all their life. There's just something tremendously wicked about not giving a damn if kids go hungry or don't have decent shelter or don't have decent schools to go to. There's something diabolical and evil about that kind of selfishness and that kind of disrespect. It's a program I know the devil wants to promote in this world because that's the world that he swims in. So when you see this corporate war on Iraq and this corporate war on Afghanistan going on, where all of George W. Bush's friends, allies, and business partners get to sell the United States all of the weapons and all the technology and all the arms and all the support systems that they need to prosecute that war, and all of Dick Cheney's cronies and buddies and allies and business partners get to reap huge profits rebuilding what Bush's buddies have destroyed. You know damn well that the program out there is just to suck the American treasury dry by any means necessary. And that's what this apart from the power connection and the lust for oil and dominance over the Middle East, that's what this is about in every which way, is to suck the treasury of the United States dry, to drain the pockets of every working person in this country and funnel all of that money into their bank accounts. Because as far as they're concerned, the time is right for them to own absolutely everything. There's no reason for you or I to have anything at all that belongs to us. They believe that it should all belong to them. I don't usually get biblical on this program, in large part because I'm not a really biblical person. I do think people need a moral compass, and just like any other compass, you know, if you're standing there facing north and you hold up your compass, the needle's pointing one way, and if you want to find true north, you have to aim just a little bit left to where that needle's pointing. These right wing lunatics, when they look at their compass, they point it right back at them and say that's where the morality lies. That's where my moral focus needs to be, is right back on me. George Bush is out there day after day touting the benefits of his Social Security quote reform unquote in order to quote save the system. Well, he has no more intention of saving the Social Security system than I do of joining the American Nazi Party. Back in his college days, he was quoted as saying that Social Security is a communist institution and it needs to be abolished. And he hasn't changed his ideas about that one bit. The idea that old folks have the ability to eat something besides dog food just drives him up the wall. And they've come up with a pretty slick solution to get rid of one of Roosevelt's most effective programs. And that plan is that they're going to funnel all that Social Security money into the stock market. Now, the Japanese have a breed of cattle called the Kobe beef, and the way they raise them in Japan is they put them in a stall when they're young, they hang them from a sling, and they force feed those calves. Actually, they're steers by then, but they force feed them just as much as they possibly can, and every day they come in and they massage that calf or that steer. They massage it to keep it relaxed and soften up the muscle so that the fat can build up in the muscle. The breed is bred so that there won't just be a fat layer around the muscle, that there'll be fat all through the muscle. And the way they feed it and the massage and that, they get a I call it a sumo cow. And when it gets up to weight and when it's ready for slicing, then the butchers come in and cut it up, and they sell it to restaurants and to private parties for hundreds of dollars a pound. It's that delicious. It's that wonderful. Well, that's George Bush wants to put Wall Street into a sling and force feed it all of our Social Security money. And of course, all that money hitting Wall Street at the same time is going to drive stock prices through the roof. And all of these money accounts will keep getting fatter and fatter and fatter. A lot of them retirement accounts, but mutual funds and individual accounts of all kinds will get fatter and fatter. And then George Bush's friends like Ken Lay and Bernie Evers and Fast Al and the rest of those privateers will come in with their knives and butcher up the stock market the same way, and they're going to take all those choice cuts home with them. And everybody who's thinking that they're going to have a retirement when they can't work anymore is going to be sadly disappointed. Now, I call those guys privateers for a reason. Back in the old days, a queen or a king who wanted somebody to go take care of all their dirty business for them would hire a privateer to go out and sink ships, and they told the privateer that it was okay to keep all the loot, do anything you want with the people, all of that is yours, I just want the ships destroyed, this country or that. And that way the king or queen didn't have to have their own army. They could, it was actually privatization. Privatization of naval operations. And it was all government sanctioned. Well, what these big corporations have done is they've become privateers on their own. The government has sanctioned all the looting and plundering and pillaging that they do. And the government protects them while they perpetrate these crimes on people around the world. So I think privateers is the perfect description of these criminals. Anyway, to get back to the Social Security issue, I want to tell you a story about my great-grandmother, Augusta Lum Lang. My great-grandfather died when she was about 49 years old. And this was back in the early 1900s, 1902, 1903. I forget the exact date that she died, or that my great-grandfather died. But she was left alone, and unfortunately, because of other circumstances, they had no farm, they had no land to sell. So she had absolutely nothing. She was left destitute by my great-grandfather's death. She lived for another 35 years, but in order to do that, she had to move from one child's house to the next and stay about 3 months at each place. That way she wasn't too much of a burden to any one of her children, but she could have somewhere where she could stay until she died. And that was fine at my grandmother's house when she was there. She contributed, she did a lot of cooking and a lot of the housework so that my grandmother could go out and work in the fields with my grandfather. They were tenant farmers back in Minnesota. A tenant farmer is the northern version of a sharecropper. But my great grandmother would do the cooking and the dishes and the laundry and things like that and make it possible for my grandparents to put out just a little bit extra effort and hopefully have just a little bit extra cash. And of course, on the farm, there wasn't any extra cost associated with feeding somebody else. There was always plenty of food available there. But that was my great-grandmother's life. She had to live off the kindness of her children, if you can imagine that, especially when you consider that one of her daughters, she was married to a minister, and my understanding was that he was pretty abusive to my great-grandmother. He was also pretty abusive to his wife. And, of course, that's where my great-grandmother died, was in that man's house, instead of in one of her other children's houses. So her last days were in a very uncomfortable and unpleasant situation, all because there was no resource for her to have any kind of independence in her old age. And that because there was no Social Security to provide something for people who were no longer able to work. And that's the world that George W. Bush and his buddies want to bring back. They think that's proper for working class people, because giving them too much means that they can't have enough. When we look at these kind of issues, we do need to go back and look at our family histories. Everybody out there has stories about how things were, how poor some of their ancestors were, what kind of struggles they had to deal with in order to survive, and how much the New Deal that Roosevelt and his administration enacted, how much that changed the concept of how life ought to be in the United States. It's a testimony to what a huge difference it made in people's lives when you consider that he was reelected in 1936, in 1940, and 1944. No other president of the United States served that many terms. And no other president of the United States has been more hated and reviled by the greedy class in this country, who worked since day one to dismantle all of the programs that Roosevelt enacted, especially the banking controls and the stock market controls. They did that because before the crash of 1929 and before the election of Roosevelt, in the first 100 days when they enacted all those changes, every 30 years in this country, every 30 years or so, there was a Great Depression. A big financial crash. There was one in 1836, 1853, 1875, 1893, and 1929. And of course, once Roosevelt and his administration enacted all of the banking regulations and all of the stock market regulations that put an end to the wild speculation, thievery, and misrepresentation that went on. I mean, it was just a big shell game before that. You know, you look at the dot-com bust and Bernie Evers and Fast Al and Enron and all that. That's what it was like. And they'd pump the market and pump the market and suck all the money in until they finally got working people sticking money into the stock market. And when they figured they'd prime the pump just as much as they could, then they took all the money and ran, leaving behind economic devastation for the country to deal with after that. It happened on a regular basis. Nothing was ever done about it until Roosevelt came along. And they hated that. They've hated it ever since. And just like the... just like a water torture, you know, they've been dripping on all of these programs, looking for a crack, looking for a little weakness, hoping to get just a little chip off the block. If they get a little chip here, then they can get a little chip there. And now, this many years down the road, almost 70 years down the road, they've managed to dismantle significant parts of the New Deal, and we're back to boom and bust in an incredible way. And these guys are so pumped up by the successes that they've had in dismantling the rest of the New Deal that now they're going after the most popular program, Social Security. And they're pretty optimistic that they're going to be able to destroy Social Security along with how they've destroyed everything else. You know, we don't usually like to assign motives to people, but you know, the people that have power, the people that have the economic power and the political power these days are greedy people. They want to make sure that nobody has a chance to challenge their dominance. And not just challenge their dominance, they want to make sure that nobody has a chance to even come close to comfort. Because, you know, I had an uncle that was a pretty rich man. He lived down in Orange County. And, in fact, he owned the garbage route down there. And he used to tell my father that it drove him crazy that a truck driver could buy a Cadillac just like his. He didn't think that was right. And, of course, the truck driver at that time could buy a Cadillac just like his because he had a union job with union wages. But my uncle thought that there ought to be some way for rich folks to have something incredibly more luxurious than working people. It was just wrong that working people had access to any kind of luxury or any kind of good life. They should always have to be struggling, and the rich should be able to flaunt what they have, and that way there's a powerful distinction between the two. I mean, come on, that's the whole thing behind caviar, you know. You're eating the eggs of endangered species on silver spoons, or dipping it in with silver spoons to serve on a little wafer. It probably tastes just fine. I never have had caviar. Personally, don't care to try it. Not because I'm finicky, but just because the idea is enough to gag me, that people are willing to go to that extent and pay that much money just to have something that nobody else can have, or nobody else should have in their mind. It's a disgusting decadence as far as I'm concerned. But for them, it's not just okay, it's a right, and it's an obligation. If you can't serve caviar to show how rich and powerful and important you are, then you failed. It must be like an aphrodisiac, like grinding up antlers or something. The Chinese medicine, you know, where they grind up antlers and different animal parts in order to enhance somebody's sexual ability or something like that. It must be that these rich folks have the same kind of primitive idea about what's going to make you a better person. That's going to do it for Labor News Radio today. I want to thank everybody for listening. Thank everybody for their support. Remember that you can support KITR, LP, Kettle Falls, by sending a check to made out to KITR, to KITR, P.O. Box 456, Kettle Falls, 99141. Any donation is appreciated. For those of you picking up this program from Radio for All or other local stations, be sure to support radioforall.net and support your local station. And thanks for listening.